the world. I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. And we're very pleased to welcome Yaakov Lapin, Military Affairs Correspondent and Analyst at JNS, as well as the in-house analyst at the Miriam Institute and a research associate at the Alma Center. I recommend his Patreon website, Strategic Assessment, which you can find Yaakov Lapin patreon.com/YaakovLapin. However, Yaakov, I go immediately to the question at hand about these last days. The IDF in the Jenin encampment in the north of the West Bank, 3 and 4 July, there were casualties, there were concerns, there was information around the world twisting and turning. These many days later, is the operation considered a success in Jerusalem? Is the IDF pleased with the results? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thank you very much for having me. The way to measure success for a security operation of this nature is to wait and see, because it will take time to understand whether the operation achieved its goals. And I think the first thing we should do is define what the main goal of the operation was, and that was to shatter the image of Jenin, and particularly Jenin camp, as a safe haven for terrorism. And just to give the listeners a little bit of background, over the past 2 years, the Palestinian Authority has lost complete control, security control over Jenin. It was ejected from the city, and what filled that vacuum, the power vacuum, was a very dangerous combination of Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, and localized terror factions, and all of these were fueled by Iranian money and encouragement to conduct terrorist attacks. And as a result, we saw Jenin become a real hornet's nest of terrorism. This is a role, by the way, that it played in the past as well. But now it really started exporting terrorism to other areas of the West Bank. We saw rockets being built in Jenin and fired in the direction of northern Israel. We saw dozens of shooting attacks and IEDs, powerful IEDs that were beginning to challenge the IDF's freedom of movement in the area. So the situation had reached a tipping point. And what the IDF wanted to do was to send a message to terrorists in the region that the days in which they could flee to Jenin camp and be safe there out of the reach of the IDF, those days were over. Now, it appears to me, making an initial assessment, that that operation succeeded in that limited goal. The goal is not to end all terrorism, not, you know, to find a magic bullet that will take care of security in the northern West Bank, but to make Jenin, to put it back within the reach of the IDF, and to figure out a way to deploy the IDF forces that can deal with this kind of situation. So we saw a very different approach in the way the IDF did this. Instead of going in with a battalion or a company, it went in with a brigade size of special forces, extremely elite and highly trained and highly equipped professional forces. It used air power, very selective air power, but in the form of drone strikes, and it acted with great precision. As far as I understand, no non-combatants were harmed, killed in this operation. The 12 Palestinian casualties were all combatants, as far as I understand. And the message was sent to terrorists in the region that Jenin is no longer off limits to the IDF. So it appears to have been a success, but time will tell, and it's too soon to tell with certainty.
Malcolm?
What happens in the power vacuum that exists now? Can Israel help the PA reestablish authority? Is the PA ready to reassert security control over Jenin now that Israel did the work that their security forces were supposed to do? And the removal of these manufacturing sites, this was a threat to the PA as much as it was to Israel and the terrorist attacks that resulted from that.
That's 100% correct. The threat posed by Islamist jihadist terrorism is equally aimed at harming Israel and at toppling and destroying the PA's rule. So there's certainly a common interest there, despite the fact that the PA and Israel are engaged in diplomatic conflict and the PA is constantly attacking Israel in international forums. But on the ground, there is security coordination, and there's a common interest to repress Hamas, repress Iranian influence, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and localized terrorist entities. So what we've seen in recent days is the PA has made an effort to come back into Jenin. We saw PA Chairman Mahmoud Abbas arrive this week in Jenin via helicopter in a very symbolic visit, as if to say, we are back. And we saw Palestinian Authority security forces spread out in Jenin and really try to send the message that they are back. And I think what we've seen is an internalization by the PA that they cannot afford to sit back and watch the Northern West Bank lose control. It's not just Jenin. Nablus was also a city in the Northern West Bank where the PA's control is extremely partial. And I think the PA understood that if this continues, the rest of its rule in Area A of the West Bank, going further south in Qalqilia and Bethlehem and Hebron and Ramallah itself, which is the seat of the PA's government, all of these places could also theoretically collapse in a chain reaction. And there are other reasons to be worried about the PA stability, internal reasons, and several other factors. So the PA made a decision to go back into Jenin, and they are there now. And now this maneuver is being watched very closely by the Israeli defense establishment. It's clear that the Israeli defense establishment wants the PA to succeed in this effort. But again, we have to be cautious. This is a very dynamic situation. The PA is still quite weak, and we will have to see whether it is successful in putting down roots, so to speak, in Jenin and being able to take back control of that city.
Yaakov, my understanding is that follow the money. The money is Iran's coming into Hamas's hands, Islamic Jihad's hands. Does Hamas pay Fatah participating in these terror attacks?
So the question of Fatah and its participation in terrorism is a little bit complicated because Fatah has many faces. There are groups that used to be known as Tanzim, and these are sort of localized terrorist militias that are affiliated with Fatah. Now, those groups are not actually under any control of Mahmoud Abbas. In fact, they're quite adversarial to him. So they're called Fatah, and it's confusing, but they're not under PA control. What is under PA control are those security forces who really depend on coordination with Israel for their existence. So yes, there are dangerous terrorist cells that are affiliated with Fatah. I'm not aware of them receiving Iranian money. I am aware of Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihadist cells, and localized cells. These are part of a new generation of Palestinians who are not interested in affiliating themselves formally with established terror factions. And they say, we're independent, we're not Hamas, we're not Fatah. We are defined by our geography. We are the Jenin Battalion. We are the Nablus Battalion. And this is part of their sort of rebellion against what they see as both Fatah and Hamas being corrupt and problematic, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what's also interesting is that Hamas used to demand allegiance before it would send money to these kinds of localized terror groups, but it became more pragmatic in this respect. And it said, you know, if you're willing to conduct terrorist attacks and target Israeli civilians and military forces, then we're willing to give you money, even if you're not affiliated to us, because you're still promoting our interest. And that's one of the things I think that really led to the destabilization of the area, is Hamas willing to take that extra step and support these terrorist factions with guns, with money, with propaganda, and with political support. And that actually proved to be quite effective for Hamas's goal of destabilizing the entire West Bank.
We have about a minute, Malcolm. Go ahead.
Do you think it's really realistic that Iran could coordinate a 4-5-6-sided attack, activating everything from the Houthis to Iraq at one time? And do you see the more sophisticated weapons that were found in Jenin posing an additional security threat to the IDF?
I take Iran's vision of a multi-arena threat to Israel seriously, but with caveats, because I think, you know, I don't know, we only have a minute left. So there are certain entities on the Iranian axis that are actual proxies of Iran. And if Iran pushes hard enough, it's safe to assume that they will take action. And there are others that I would designate as partners of Iran. For example, Hamas is a partner of Iran. It's not exactly a proxy. It has its own independent decision making. So I think that Iran can, if it wants to, activate multiple arenas. And that would obviously include Lebanon, Syria. Yes, Yemen is a long-range threat with its drones and missiles. There are Shiite militias in Iraq and Syria that have Iranian missiles, Iranian cruise missiles hidden that they can activate. So those are things that Iran can press a button on, so to speak. When it comes to others, like partners, they will have to rely on local decision-making. Hamas is going to ultimately decide whether it joins a multi-arena conflict or not. That's going to be a Hamas decision. And certainly Iran can place pressure, but that's not a decision that Iran can make. But ultimately, I think what's important to keep in mind is that Iran is building a ring of fire around Israel. That's the way to look at it. These are bases of firepower, rockets, missiles, drones, Yaakov, from multiple directions.
Yaakov Lapin, Malcolm Holine, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.